Okay, first of all, let me thank George and other organizers for giving me a chance to be here. I learned a lot of many different things about topology, about spin-orbit coupling effects, and about 4 and 5D transition metal oxides. And so my contribution to this puzzle will be, we'll be speaking about orbital selective effects in 4D and 5D systems which are dimerized. And usually people present a gallery of photos of contributors, and I'm happy to say that I don't need to do this since my single co-author Daniel is here. So let me start. So what is the motivation? Actually, when you deal with transition metal oxides based on the 4D and 5D metals, it's dimerized compounds, then it's quite often then experimental magnetic moment, which you see, is much smaller than theoretical one, which you expect from the given electronic configuration for some oxidation state. So how to explain this? There are two usual ways to explain. The first one is the hybridization effects. So for instance, I'm from band structure community, so this is most natural way for me to explain the decrease of magnetic moment, experimental one, in comparison with theoretical. So d orbitals, they are strongly hybridized with ligand p orbitals, and these ligand p orbitals, they act as a kind of a ballast, and they do not allow for full hybridization, for development of full spin moment sometimes. And the second explanation, the nature, also quite natural one, is that we may have strong spin orbit coupling, and which and we may have not quenched orbital moment, which can be opposite to spin moment, and therefore total magnetic moment will be smaller, can be smaller. And what we add to these explanations, to these possibilities, is that we argue that there are also another kind of effects, and effects relative, which are related to orbital selective behavior. And I will try to explain to you what do they mean by this. Yeah?
All the systems are metal or they are insulators?
Mostly they are insulators. So they are dimerized. Somehow this is a kind of, you know, isolated object which, yeah, usually do not provide some conductivity. So they simply isolate these dimers. They couple somehow, but well. Okay. So the outline of the talk is following. I will give some introductory comments. Then we'll discuss the results of model treatment. I will give some examples of real systems where our orbital selective is operative, and then explain some very unusual effect, in our opinion, how double exchange mechanism can be suppressed by formation of molecular orbitals. And then we will discuss finally influence of spin orbit coupling on orbital selective physics. So let me start from the very beginning with simplest dimer which exists. So this is hydrogen molecule. We have one orbital per side and one electron. And everybody knows that the ground state corresponds to spin singlet. So from the very beginning, we proposed two types of description of such an object. One is due to Hund and Mulliken, and this is molecular orbital type of description when we put two electrons on bonding orbital. And this is a good description for the case when Hopin is large and on-site Hubbard torsion is small. And the second variant is due to Hytel and London, and this type of description is good then used large enough. So there are no terms in this wave function where both electrons sit on the same side, say one. And however, in some time, Coulson and Fisher, they realized that actually one can write quite general wave function which has contribution from Hytel-London one and part of the terms from molecular orbital. And this wave function is good for intermediate situation. It can describe both limits and intermediate situation as well. So let me come to a little bit more complicated situation when we have not one orbital but few orbitals. For instance, two, and few electrons per side. Again, two electrons. And it's clear that we are not in the degenerate situation, so let these orbitals, I will label them C and D, they have different, they may have, we consider the situation, then they have different, very different Hopping integrals, or bonding antibonding splitting is very different. For C orbitals, it is large, and D orbitals, it is small, or even zero. So again, we have now four electrons per dimer, and we may have molecular orbital type of solution if both Hopping integrals are still larger than interaction parameters. Or on opposite side, we still have some modified Hartle-London type of ground state. This is the situation when interaction parameters are larger than Hopping integrals. However, if we are somewhere in the middle, when one of the Hopping integrals is larger than interaction parameters and another one is smaller or zero, then we have such a regime, then two electrons occupy C orbitals and they are in a spin singlet state, but these d orbitals, they may carry a local magnetic moment. They have local spins simply, and in this sense, these c and d orbitals, they are decoupled, and the behavior can be called orbital selective. So we have spin singlet here and local spins there on d orbitals. Okay. So, how to write wave function in this case? One can do this in such a way. So we construct molecular orbital for C electrons, and D electrons, they can behave very differently. They can provide us ferromagnetism, antiferromagnetic state, or even Hartle-London. So since they are decoupled from C orbitals, they can act differently, and this is why we call it orbital selective behavior. So so this is true if TD is zero. If it is not, one can perform very simple model treatment, having a look on an isolated dimer and construct your wave function as a linear combination of this molecular orbital and some terms from, which come from Hartle-London. And you can treat your problem variationally and do everything analytically, and what you will get is that actually if U is zero, then this alpha parameter which mixes this molecular orbital with Hartle-London one, it just depends on the ratio of Hund's rule exchange and largest Hopping integral. If TC is large, then alpha is almost zero and we are in orbital selective regime. In the opposite limit, we are in Hartle-London regime and we somehow go from one regime to another one. So, and these are the results of model treatment. But let me first show you how we can have these C orbitals and D orbitals. So C orbitals, they have strong large Hopping, strong large overlap between orbitals. For instance, in common H geometry, this can be XY orbitals, and there would be there will be direct overlap between XY orbitals. YZ, for instance, YZ orbitals in this geometry can be considered as d orbitals, so they do not overlap directly. And since we are dealing with dimers, usually these, so in principle, there can be also possible super exchange or overlap between this oxygen, this p orbital of oxygen, like in iridates. But in dimer system, this contribution, direct DD Hopping, is usually much larger than the Hopping via PZ orbitals here. Since Hopping depends, is just Hopping is 1 over d to the 5, where d is a distance. So, and for common phase, our C orbitals can be these A1G orbitals, which look directly to each other. They provide large hopping, and then EG pi orbitals. I borrowed this from Budinov book. I couldn't actually draw it. So these EG pi orbitals, they do not look to each other again, and so they can be considered somehow as a local orbit. Okay, so I presented already results for isolated dimer, and they were trivial. For instance, let's consider not just a dimer, but the chain of dimer. And you can solve this problem with cluster DMFT. So we have a dimer with, again, two orbitals, and hoppings are very different, TC and TD. And we construct one-dimensional chain, and there is also inter-chain, inter-dimer hopping. So this is the Hamiltonian we deal with. So this is inter-dimer. There is inter-dimer part, and interaction. So interaction is only on-site interaction. We do not have inter-site repulsion between one and two. Sites 1 and 2. Okay, so we can solve this using Hirschfei QMC technique and calculate, for instance, magnetic susceptibility. So this is shown here. Well, actually, this susceptibility, this is temperature dependence of chi, it looks quite conventional for people who get used to deal with one-dimensional chains, alternative chains, or something like this. So it has spin gap-like behavior in low temperature range, and spins behave like independent for higher temperatures. And but what is interesting actually is the partial contribution to this susceptibility due to different orbitals. So again. D orbitals, these orbitals are local. So we see that in low temperature range, all the response comes from these local orbitals. And molecular orbitals, C orbitals, they start to start to respond to the field at much higher temperatures. And this is quite important, actually, since people get used to say fit magnetic susceptibility with some model curve from Bonner-Fishian or modified description and get some, for instance, spin gap, the value of spin gap, and when they fit, they take the total spin from both orbitals, C and D. However, this is very clear that the low temperature response comes only from localized orbitals, and so one has to, in such a case, to take into account that the spin has to be much smaller. It shouldn't be a whole spin of the system, it should be a spin just from the localized orbitals.
Excuse me.
Yeah.
2 sigma on this part. Error bar. Yeah.
Wow, that's a very good question, but actually, so I would say this kind of, so not that large.
I'm asking specifically, yeah. Because the green curve,
yeah,
seems to go up again.
Yeah, that's true. So this is really an error bar.
This is error.
Yeah.
Okay.
Exactly. So we somehow knew this QMC the process, and we see that there is error bar, but it is quite small. So you can build it for these results. Yeah.
The system you actually discuss, it's already dimerized. It's okay.
Yeah, exactly.
And how much is dimerization?
So in dimerization, so
you take some.
What we plug into the calculation is the hopping. In the dimer, the strongest one, smallest one, and intra-dimer hopping, right? So you can measure this in terms of the hopping. So in this case, this was something about 1 over 10, probably, 0.1. the ratio between Tc and T prime. So it's not, it is dimerized, but not completely. So you can consider this like an insulated dimer, simply. So there is coupling between dimers. And you may also, this is something we are working on now, how these all these things changes with increasing interdimer hopping. So it survives. This orbital selective physics survives when you increase interdimer hopping. Interdimer hopping. But this is something which is in progress now. This work. Okay, so another quite important point is that we considered up to now only a system where dimers have been already formed. But in principle, they can be formed spontaneously due to parallel transition. And then this will be orbital selective parallel transition. Okay, let me show you also how magnetization depends on the magnetic field. So we switch on magnetic field, and again, localized electrons start to react on this field, and only, and so this is orbital selective regime. D orbitals, localized orbitals, they react on magnetic field, and only then molecular orbitals, C electrons, they start to respond on the field. So this is orbital selective region. And the width of this orbital selective region depends on the ratio of J-Hund to largest Hopkinian integral, Tc. And you may see it here. So if we increase Hopkin integral, for instance, then we decrease this orbital selective region. This is quite important. Oh, yeah.
The system has a spin gap. What is the magnetization?
There is no actually spin gap since we have local electrons, so they start to react immediately. Yeah, but it depends on how large is TD. So maybe on this scale you simply cannot see it. So if there would be, there is actually, the TD is quite small, the Hopkin integral for D electrons, right? So if it is large enough, then we will have a spin gap, right? For localized electrons.
The previous picture of the sensitivity.
Oh, the parameters are a bit different.
Okay.
So you may have both actually. Okay. So indeed, you may start from here if TD would be large. Okay. So what are requirements for this orbital selective? For this orbital selective behavior.
Can I ask again on John's question?
Yes.
So there's a critical value?
There has to be, right.
Like say on J1, J2 chains where they're kind of...
Not J1, J2, but C. So we've got C electrons which are in spin singlet somehow, in their own spin singlet state. And we've got D electrons for which Hopkin is smaller. If we'll increase this hopping, then finally we'll end up with full spin singlet state. So there can be a spin gap if this hopping parameter is large enough. So it is not a question of how G1 and G2 in the chain with alternative exchange, how do they what is the ratio between them? This is the question of what is the ratio between Hopkin integral for C electrons and D electrons.
The question was
how large is
pin a number for this ratio where the gap opens.
Oh, actually, we haven't investigated this point yet. So, you know, we can just argue that there has to be some volume. Okay, so where can we expect this behavior? Actually, the first requirement is that one Hopkin integral should be much larger than another one, and it also has to be larger than Kuhn's rule coupling. So this is a quite natural situation in 4D and 5D transition metal oxides, where in comparison with 3D, the wave function in 4D and 5D is much more extended, and therefore T increases, hopping increases in 4D and 5D, and J-Hund decreases. For instance, let's consider the same occupation number. For instance, for D electrons, this will be the case of manganese 3+ in 3D case and 4+ in 4D case. Then Hund's coupling is about 1 electron volt here and 0.7 for 4D case, and in 5D it will be about 0.5 electron volt. So it really decreases going from 3D to 5D. And
so what's the reason decreasing?
For decreasing, so your wave function is more and more extended like this. You see, so you change your principal quantum number simply. Okay, and Hopping integral is just changes just in opposite direction. So these two compounds, they have absolutely the same geometry. These are common octahedra which share their edges. So in 3D case, this bonding and antibonding split is about 1.4, and here about 2.2 electron volts. So there is a huge growth of Hopping integrals when you go from 3D to 4D and 5D. Okay, so, and this is the first example actually. So let's continue with vanadium dioxide. And there is a transition about 340K, which is simultaneously structural transition when dimers appear. And below this temperature, this compound is non-magnetic and insulator and dimerized. And molybdenum compound, it is dimerized always in any temperature, but still this compound is metallic and it also paramagnetic, not non-magnetic like vanadium dioxide in the low temperature phase. So what is the reason? Actually, the answer is quite trivial. So now we have two electrons, and one part of the electrons, they form spin singlet state molecular orbitals in dimerized structure, but other electrons, these are d electrons in our annotations, they respond to the field, they provide metallic conductivity and other things. But this example is quite trivial. So the more interesting question is it possible to switch magnetic moment in some compound completely by this mechanism? So say in some phase there is magnetic moment, and in another phase there is no magnetic moment. So I would like to tell you about this niobium compound. So electronic configuration is D. We have 1.5 electron per side, and there is a structural transition and magnetic transition at about 90K here. So this is the plot which I took from this publication, but unfortunately these authors were a little bit too fast, and they explained us that this feature has nothing to do with real physics. So they simply did not. So there are two curves. One is field cool, and another is warmed in field. And they simply warmed and cooled a little bit too fast. So if you would do this slowly enough, then there will be a spin gap, kind of spin gap. So susceptibility would go to zero like this. So finally, it means that in the low temperature phase, one has to consider this system as non-magnetic, but in high temperature region, it is Q-device-like with this effective magnetic moment, which roughly may correspond to spin 1/2. So this system is dimerized, actually. So niobium 06 octahedra, they share their edges. And in high temperature phase, valence bond analysis shows us that the valency of each niobium is 3.5. And in low temperature phase, there is a structural transition, and we have now two types of dimers: short dimers and longer dimers, but still dimers. And they attributed it to different charge states of the niobiums in this dimer and in that one. So here niobium is 3 plus, and here both niobiums are 4 plus. So what band structure calculation shows us? That here the niobium is magnetic, and magnetic moment is about 1 Bohr magneton, which roughly corresponds to this effective moment extracted from experiment. And in this low temperature phase, there is a charge order. There is no such a full charge order, but the difference between charge of this niobium and that one is about 0.1 only. This is what calculation shows us. And this phase, in this case, niobiums, they are non-magnetic. So this follows from GGA. So GGA describe quite nicely this this compound. So basically, we have 1.5 electrons here in this dimer in high temperature phase. And this means that there are 3 electrons in high temperature phase. And we can put them like this to have spin 1/2, total spin 1/2. And this is actually orbital selective behavior. And since part of the electrons, they are decoupled and form molecular orbital. But in low temperature phase, we've got dimers with 2 electrons and 4 electrons. And this one is spin singlet. And here one may expect actually a spin equal 1 state. But somehow, the this splitting between two YZ and XZ orbitals, it's quite large, about 1 electron volts. So therefore, we cannot have these electrons here. Otherwise, we'll follow Hund rule, right? So we have to put it in a low spin, some kind of low spin state configuration. So we've got 2 spin singlet state in low temperature phase. So we see that if we go from here to there, our orbital selective behavior, the stabilization of electrons on molecular orbitals switches on different molecular orbitals, switches magnetism in the system somehow. Okay, so combination of charge ordering and orbital selective behavior suppresses magnetism actually in the low temperature phase, if we will go from here to there.
Oh, is it known what drives this transition?
No, that's a good, very good question. So you may you may propose different things, yeah, but this is unknown. It's quite, you know, new system. So we have already started with situation when we have non-integer number of electrons per side. So let's continue and consider explicitly this situation when we have 1.5 electron per side or 3 electrons per three electrons per dimer. Then we can put them like this. this is actually nothing else but double exchange. So you may double exchange like state. So you may consider this electron simply hops from one side to another one and makes these two spins to have the same spin projection. So total spin here is 3/2. And this is actually exactly the model which Zener considered in his seminal paper. So the total energy will be, in very simple ionic consideration, will be like this. And this is a typical situation for 3D transition metal oxides. however, another configuration is also possible when we take this electron, say, and put it here, and we'll end up with spin singlet on C electron on C levels, and the single survived spin will be on D shell, on D levels, these D levels. So this is the energy of this configuration, and this is very clear that they can compete. And the total spin here is just 1/2. So we can say that this orbital selective behavior may suppress double exchange, may suppress magnetic moment in the system. So, and it turns out, I will show you some examples, that that actually for 4D and 5D transition metal oxides, this situation is quite typical, and not that one. Okay. So these are again results of cluster DMFT treatment. So now we have a different number of electrons, not 4 but 3 per dimer. And let's let me show you how number of electrons on different sides on D and C changes with Hund's rule coupling and and hopping. So if Hund's rule coupling is large enough, then we have almost two electrons on C levels. Oh no, on C levels. Hund's rule, J Hund is small. So then we have two electrons on C levels like this. So we have a molecular orbital here. And when we increase J Hund, we go from this configuration to that one. Or we unfortunately cannot measure usual magnetization in this kind of calculation. We can measure just squared magnetization. And for this configuration, spin is 1/2. It means magnetization is 1, or squared magnetization is 1. And for that one, spin is 3/2, magnetization is 3, and squared magnetization is 9. So, and this is how this squared magnetization depends on J Hund. So again, if J Hund is small, we have orbital selective, we are in the orbital selective regime, and if it is large enough, we are in double exchange regime. Okay, so let me show you some examples. The molybdenum compound, so we have 1.5 electrons in D side, and effective magnetic moment recalculated from this ionic configuration would be like this. Crystal structure is dimerized, but experimentally, effective magnetic moment is much smaller. So why is it so? This is because of huge body and antibody splitting in this system. So we've got common H geometry, and XY orbital has huge bonding antibonding splitting. This is bonding XY, this is antibonding. And therefore, we have to localize two electrons on C levels. And then we'll end up with a spin 1/2, which will give us this effective magnetic moment, which actually in a good agreement with with experimental one. Okay, so this is the example of the system where orbital selective behavior suppresses double exchange. So we do not have spin 3/2 here on dimers. However, the most interesting question is that is it possible to switch off double exchange in some material or in a series of materials changing some external parameters? So let me show some example of some materials. So this is this series of compounds when we change the rarefied element here, the magnetic moment also changes. So basically, ruthenium here it has 3.5 electrons in D shell, therefore one may expect magnetic moment about 2.5 Bohr magneton per ruthenium, but experimentally it is much smaller. And what is more interesting is that there is compound based on yttrium, which has smallest, which has magnetic moment even smaller than these two. So there are two questions: why magnetic moments are in principle so small, and the second one is why this compound is kind of exceptional case. So crystal structure actually is shown here. It again consists of dimers, which share, in this case, their faces. So actually, band structure calculation somehow quite good in this case. And if you will use conventional GGA calculation, then total magnetic moment will be quite close to experimental one for a compound based on lanthanum. And you may also understand why is it so. So actually, what is going on here is that we put two electrons on molecular orbitals here and also there, but three spins they stay, they are non-compensated and they bear some local magnetic moment. The total spin per dimer will be 3/2, or magnetization per ruthenium, not per dimer, will be again 3/2. If we consider a compound based on yttrium, then again, GGA may reproduce quite well this small experimental magnetic moment, and we can trace what is the reason for this suppression, for suppression of magnetic moment. It turns out that in this compound, there is additional splitting between these EG pi levels. They are the bonding antibonding splitting in this compound in comparison with that one is larger. So we take this electron from here and put it to there, and final magnetic moment is just spin 1/2. And total magnetization should be 0.5, exactly, almost exactly like an experiment. Okay, so we see that large bonding antibonding splitting in EG pi bands switches off double exchange in yttrium-based compound. So double exchange indeed can be switched off in this series by actually by chemical pressure. So the change of bonding antibonding splitting is related to change of distances. Okay, so let me come to the final final topic: is how spin-orbit coupling actually does it have any influence on orbital selective behavior or not? So, but let me start from the example from iridate again. Everybody likes iridates nowadays, so we consider this iridate, and we have 4.5 electrons in D shell. It means that there are 1.5 holes here, so we again have dimers, and effective magnetic moment is about 1 Bohr magneton per dimer. So this is again smaller than one may expect from this configuration. So what is the reason? Actually, the situation here is quite complicated, since about 200K there is structure transition, and actually you do not see this structure transition on the on any magnetic characteristic. So it doesn't actually inflate. Somehow it looks like. The again valence bond analysis shows us that there has to be two types of iridiums, 5+ and 4+. And in principle, one may argue that this iridium 5+, it is in the D4 configuration. So if orbital moment would be not quenched, then it can be opposite. It has to be opposite to spin moment, and it may reduce total moment. So of this iridium. So this, the magnetic moment here can be suppressed by spin-orbit coupling, and this can react on external magnetic field. However, it turns out that this is not the case. We can show this, and actually, one may also argue that actually this effective magnetic moment is extracted from high temperature behavior of susceptibility, which don't know nothing about structural transition, about charge disproportionation. So this small magnetic moment, it shouldn't be related with spin-orbit coupling. Okay, so one can produce again conventional band structure calculation, and we get quite large magnetic moment in this calculation, and it is clear then we again have these two configurations. And actually, according to parameters of the system, this double exchange picture wins here, should win at least. And this is why magnetic moment in GGA calculation is quite large, actually. All this is very good, but it actually simply contradicts to experiment where effective magnetic moment is small. So what is wrong? Actually, we have not included spin-orbit coupling. And if we plug into our calculation scheme spin-orbit coupling, then total magnetic moment becomes quite small. So what is the reason? Maybe again this J0 stuff, actually when we analyze different contribution to the total moment, spin contribution from spin moment and orbital moment, you see that there is no full compensation of spin moment by orbital. So this is not due to this decrease of the moment from 2 Bohr magneton to 0.8 is not due to formation of J0 state of iridium 5+. One may trace the reason for such a decrease of magnetic moment by analyzing density of states plot in non-magnetic GGA and again in non-magnetic GGA, but with but taking into account spin-orbit coupling. So one may see that what spin-orbit coupling does, it splits this peak actually on two, and this splitting is quite large. So if one would plot contribution from different J's, then it turns out that this peak comes from J effective 1/2. But this J effective 1/2, it is not really ionic J effective 1/2, since you see there is a huge admission from J effective 3/2, since the octahedra are not ideal, and we also have huge inter-side hopping in the dimer. It is probably not the best picture that I have, but there is green curve here and red curve. So green is from one iridium and red from another one, and one may see that they are strongly hybridized. So this is some kind of J effective 1/2. But in any case, this kind of effective J 1/2 state, it goes up in energy due to spin-orbit coupling. And finally, we have to move this electron from here to there, and we end up with a small magnetic moment. Probably I should write not S but J here. So in this compound, we see that spin-orbit coupling conspires actually with hopping and helps to suppress magnetic moment, helps to suppress double exchange. But actually, there is a kind of a general question. So is it a normal situation? Is it a general trend or not? Yep. It's OK. I'm almost finished. OK, so in principle, we understood that actually interaction, on-site interaction, always it tries to localize electrons on atomic orbitals, not on molecular orbitals. So they act, this interaction, on-site interaction, against hopping. In this iridate, we understood that spin-orbit coupling conspires with hopping and acts against J Hund. But one may, in principle, consider a very simple example. For instance, 1.5 electron per side, common 8 geometry, then largest hopping will be like this. For XY orbitals or LZ effective equal to zero, and again write down the energies of molecular orbital solution and double exchange. And then we realize that actually spin-orbit coupling helps to double exchange in this situation, not to hopping. So actually, spin-orbit coupling can act with J Hund or against it, in principle. So actually, hopping spin-orbit coupling is a kind of girl. So in some situation, it befriends with hopping, and in one situation, it likes another guy. It likes Hund's coupling. So effect of spin-orbit coupling actually strongly depends on the geometry of the system, and it means on the active orbitals and on particular fillings. So it can act with against hopping or with hopping. It depends on the situation. And this is actually all I have to say. Many thanks.
Discussing iridates, you never discuss the G factor, how it enters into the game, because there is also the normalization of magnetic moment due to G factor.
Yeah, that's a very good question. We actually didn't calculate it. We, yeah, that's true. That's true. So in our calculation, we get just total moment J like this.
So I'm just curious, like. So in obvious systems, dimer organization is first caused by the charge order because of this cooling reaction.
In principle, in which one?
In this system, you started some dimerization,
yep.
Right? So dimerization itself is caused by charge order.
Well, generally speaking, no. So there can be different reasons for dimerization. So compound can simply grow like this. There can be pyroslice transition.
Sure. Yeah. So basically, you are studying some consequence after dimerization.
Yeah, our results, kind of. Yeah.
It's more like a few-body problem instead of many-body problem.
This is many body problem, definitely. So since you cannot describe Hadfield-London like states in a one electron picture. No way.
Oh, it's a stupid question. You had element ME somewhere in your talk. What's that element?
ME. This is metal.
Oh,
metal.
This is like barium.
Yeah. So yeah, you change this metal some.
So in one of the systems we discussed, like in this question, this dimerization kind of strongly couples to lattice degrees of freedom.
No, we didn't.
Most of the cases, it's a structural dimer.
Yeah, well, most, yeah. So
they are just there.
So for this iridate material that you mentioned, is you have charge order above 200 Kelvin, and there is no signature of in skin susceptibility.
Yeah, that's very strange, but there are signatures in the in the structure. So yeah, so the reason probably is that what is important is what's going on inside the dimer. So that so somehow with this structural transition, you just redistribute somehow your charge density, but it doesn't really, it has no strong influence on the magnetic properties. So magnetic properties are defined by intra-dimer physics. So, by molecular orbitals like this, yeah.
It's Sergei again. Yeah.